Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, you're listening to Tax Tuesdays. This is Toby Mathis.
Jeff Webb.
And we're going to be on board here for the next hour or so. I always say hour. We're going to hit it this time. Dang it. We have already received a ton of questions, and I think you guys broke my question answer feature. No, I'm just kidding. We have a couple guys on to answer questions. Please do not type in really long questions. It kills my screen. And it seems like some of you guys decided that it was a good time to write a book. Simple questions, and then we'll jump through and we'll answer them. This is pretty funny. I've never seen this many big, really long questions come right out at the beginning. I think that they're...
He's not kidding.
No, they're auditioning for something special today. A bunch of you guys are verbose today. Let's jump in. We have a lot to do in a little bit of time. So first off, we have lots of social media places you can go to learn things if you want to learn. And also, if you have very specific types of things that you're doing, and somebody says, I'm so sorry, somebody must have feel bad if they put it wrong. No, it's not your fault, guys. It's that GoToMeeting has decided to give us a very small window that won't get drug bigger. They're having a little issue. So when you write more than three or four lines, it ends up being really, like, really huge. And it's hard to read. Anyway, so it's not you guys. I'm just giving you a hard time. Tax Tuesday rules. Ask all your questions. You can send them in via Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors. We are getting hundreds a week right now, so we are trying to get through them. We have Pio and Elliot and Susan and Taddy on. Is Taddy on?
Tavia's on.
We have a whole bunch of people there to help you. So we're going to be answering your questions live, and also we have... a lot of horsepower there to answer your questions. You have everybody from tax attorneys to CPAs to really fantastic bookkeepers. So we are going to jump through this. And don't worry, guys, we will get through it. Let me see if I can go all the way up to the beginning or all the way down to the bottom. Where are we at? There we go. It's kind of done some weird things in our time. Isn't that weird?
That is weird.
So I think that GoToMeeting's having issues right now on some of their technology. So we'll just roll with it. Fun stuff. Opening questions. I have had my work hours cut due to COVID. Under the CARES Act, can I access my 401k from work? I also have a separate solo 401k. We'll go over that. I have an LLC and a nonprofit. Could they go together? Remember when you used to say, let's go together?
Yeah.
I immediately thought of that from like fourth grade. Let's see. How should I handle sales tax within my e-commerce store? Do I follow my state use tax or do I need to get the buyers? So we'll go over that. Do we need to pay taxes on an SBA loan? Good question. We'll hit that. Recently, my mother passed away. Now both my parents are gone. I'm very sorry to hear that first off. They set up a revocable living trust in which their primary home was held. My brother and I are listed as successor trustees. The trust document says that it is a grantor trust. My brother and I are in agreement that the house that is owned by the trust will need to be sold. What are the tax ramifications? So we'll go over that, and you'll be very happy, by the way. Can you accept the EIDL loan if you have already received the PPP loan? Will there be any issues with PPP forgiveness if you accept EIDL? And we'll go over what those are and how they interact. Am I able to purchase real estate with my solo 401k account and rent the house out to my brother? I must really like your brother, but we'll answer that. I like watching Jeff like start to lose his mind. But the answer is going to be surprising. I have a property owned by an LLC, which is owned by an S corp. Say that 10 times fast. No. So I have a property owned by an LLC, which is owned by an S corp. I'm selling this property and want to make a charitable contribution during the closing. Can I dual close and sell the property to the charity and have the charity sell the property to the final buyer? Now they're thinking like an accountant.
All right.
Yeah. All right. We'll go over that. Do I have to have an LLC or a corporation listed on my W-9 form, or can I just use my traditional IRA and use that information to purchase tax liens? You're way higher than me in your chair.
I've noticed that.
Jeff is like lording over me right now. And I look over at him and he's literally about a foot higher than me in his chair, which is okay. I'm okay with it. I can look up at you. Bask in your glory. All right. Did the deadline. I'm going to crank my. It's that TV. Like, what is that? Those commercials where the guy like raises a seat up. Right. Did the deadline for Roth conversions get extended also? That's a really good question. I don't know.
I know.
Hopefully Jeff knows these answers because I'm batting a zero right now. Right. What is the best way to handle a deceased parent's 401k and pension benefit to minimize tax burden? I was wondering if opening a solo 401k would be a good option. Would it be better to have an S corp or C corp? And when should I think about converting? As in, how much revenue should I be making before I even start thinking about that? So that's a really good one. Established a C corp in September 2019. Up to that point, we had significant educational expenses over $40,000. Since then, no registered income. How long, in terms of 11-20 tax years, can I carry startup expenses to include education prior to formation? Can I take a $100,000 distribution from my 457 and contribute it to my housing nonprofit under the 19 or the 2020 CARES 100% AGI charity contributor? We'll go over what that means. And you guys are wicked today. You guys are smart because you guys are starting to think. I imagine that in 20 years, I hadn't seen these types of questions. You've been doing this a lot longer than me, but you guys are actually like, it's pretty impressive. You guys are rocking it. Yeah. See, Jeff said, somebody said you're doing the power move. You do have a power move. And I have no idea what's going on with my questions. They're all funky times, so maybe I'll figure that before we're done. Hey guys, giveaway. Woo, woo, woo. All right, so we have coming up on Saturday our free live stream event for Infinity Investing. If you have not done one, I would recommend that you do. They're a lot of fun. First off, it gives you a reason to hang out with your kids or anybody else that likes investing. And we mess around quite a bit with a lot of numbers. We do some calculators. We go over a bunch of different types of investments. I usually bring in at least two or three people to talk about certain types of investments. And what we're really looking for is cash flow forever. So you can come and do it. It's free. Been teaching it now for a few years. The results are amazing to watch people who really get into something that they can't hurt themselves on, and they do very, very well. So it's Saturday, June 27th. You can get the recording as well. Just register. It's absolutely free. And it's really cool. It's working really well. And if you had been listening to us back in March, you'd be way ahead right now. Not tooting our own horn, but you could see things that were in the markets that were happening. And our guys did pretty well. Like, it was a great opportunity to buy, and buy they did, and benefit they did. So it's kind of fun. All right, questions. You guys have a lot of questions. I'm trying to decide whether to repay an independent contractor PPP loan, which is under $15,000. Could you clarify the current criteria that I need to justify asking for loan forgiveness? What level of income drop did I need to justify the loan? Question 46 from the SBA states, any borrower that together with its affiliates, 20 received PPP loans with an original principal amount of less than $2 million will be deemed to have made required certification. Does that mean I automatically meet the safe harbor criteria? So, John, the answer is yes. You automatically are going to be deemed to have need for it. The $15,000 can be used on whatever your net monthly income. So if you have $15,000 and you're an independent contractor, then I'm going to assume that 2.5 months was somewhere around the, what's 15 divided by 2.5?
5,000.
So it's five. Is it? No, five times three is 15,000. I'm
right.
So going to get I'm going to make fun of you so hard for that. No.
6,000.
Is it 6,000?
6,000.
Oh, is it 15,000? See, now I have to see it. I only trust the calculator.
I'm waiting for answers to start popping up on the screen.
Yeah, usually there's an accountant, but it's going to be down here and they're all going to make fun of us. So $6,000 a month. So you now have 24 weeks to spend your money. It was 8 weeks. So you're going to use up and you're not going to have to pay any of it back, John. It's going to be free money to you. You could use it for utilities and rents and things like that, but you're not going to have to worry about it. So as long as you pay yourself in the next 24 months or 24 weeks, excuse me, $15,000, you're good. And yeah, you're in the safe harbor under 2 million. Then you don't have to worry about justifying it. You're deemed to be justified. And I'm still trying to move this and it won't let me. All right. I got a new rental property. My first property ever. Fantastic. It will close on October 16th. So first off, congratulations. I don't even have my primary home yet. I want inside and outside protection. My first question is, am I debating, should I put it in a Wyoming LLC and then register in Georgia? Or should I put it in a trust to make Georgia LLC as a beneficiary? So number one, it depends on whether you have a loan on it. And it really comes down to if you're buying it and it's a rental property, by all means, if you can buy it for cash, then you just put it in a Georgia LLC. And that's where I would leave it for you right now. Like, honestly, I would just do an LLC. If you don't have much else to, for them to take, I'm not horribly worried about Wyoming. Wyoming is a outside liability unless you're in a, unless I'm misreading this and you're in a high income category. Really what we're trying to do is make sure that that property won't have a liability problem that follows you around the rest of your life. Second question is, will there be any complications when I sell the property down the road if it's an LLC or a trust? Now, the way the LLC and the trust work together, it's quite often I'll make them disregarded so there isn't even a tax return. As you grow and if you need funding, like if you're doing commercial properties, we're going to put them in a partnership LLC and it still flows down to your page two of your Schedule E on your 1040. So it still flows onto your return. What about piercing the veil? Do not worry about that at this point. I would just make it the, if you have a loan on it, I'm using a land trust with the Georgia LLC. If you don't have a loan, I'm just putting it in a Georgia LLC. A whole bunch of other questions. Boy, that guy that got his answer left. He bolted quick. He just wanted to know that he didn't have to pay it back. All right. I have had my work hours cut due to COVID. Under the CARES Act, can I access my 401k from work? I also have a separate solo 401k. Jeff.
So you can access your 401k. And there's two ways to do it, either through a distribution or a loan. And the loan is probably, if with a 401k, I'd say that's the better way to go. You're going to have to repay that 401k, but you're not going to pick up any income from it.
Absolutely.
Now, with the 401k from work, your only issue is getting it past the plan administrator, probably somebody at your work who oversees it. You're going to have to justify pulling that money out.
So there's a certification that you file under the CARES Act to avoid the 10% early withdrawal penalty or any tax. And that's saying that you've been affected by COVID, which you have. And they just relaxed that rule. Was it today or yesterday that the Treasury came out and actually relaxed it further, saying that even if you live with somebody who's been affected by COVID, that you could still claim it. So anybody in your household that's been affected, or you've been affected, or you've had an adverse effect because of COVID, which is, yeah, my work hours got cut, then you can, A, pull it out early, like Jeff said, and you don't have to worry about the 10% penalty or tax, as long as you pay that back within 3 years, the end of the third tax year, which is December 31st of 2022. Mm-hmm. Then the other side of it is, can I borrow the money out of my 401k? If you borrow the money out of your 401k, you can go up to $100,000 total loans from qualified plans. Weird thing is, if you have a separate solo 401k, you can borrow up to $100,000 out of it and leave your work out of it. If it's your work, they can choose whether or not they're going to follow the new CARES Act rule for the $100,000. The benefit to borrowing the money is that you're paying yourself back interest, but also you have a 6-year payback. The first year is deferred. So you wouldn't be paying that thing back until 2021, 22, 23, 24, 25, 22, 23, whatever it is, 6 years. So it's 2025, 26.
And, you know, when we're talking about taking money out of 401ks or IRAs, you really have to have a plan in place before you pull that money out. Uh-huh. Am I going to be able to repay this? Or if not, am I going to be able to pay the taxes and so forth? Just don't pull out $100,000, spend it all with no plan on how to repay it.
No, what Jeff's saying is absolutely 100% accurate. You want to make sure that you're still going to pay it back. And if you don't, then at least it's a 401k and you're going to have income inclusion over a period of time. So if you don't pay it, you could have the whole loan dumped back to you. If you don't pay back the other one, you're going to avoid the 10% penalty, but you'd have a taxable event on the entire amount. So either way, you're going to get hit if you don't pay it back. Question that's online here. I submitted a question by email 15 minutes ago. This may be a duplicate. They will get to you, Chad, on the other email, but you have a good question. And these were the people that I was making fun of having really long questions. You can kind of see that I'm literally reading the first three questions. They're all like paragraph. So I'm just giving you a hard time. I would do it too. I can't imagine writing anything in less than three lines. All right. I received a $25,000 loan for my PPP, which I have used completely towards payroll. My understanding is that we will not include this amount as gross taxable income for my business. Correct. However, I still need to deduct and pay my normal payroll tax responsibility on the portion of the loan. For example, federal withholding, Social Security, Medicare, state unemployment. Is that correct? Or do I include that amount I am paying the employee taxes as part of the PPP loan amount? Hope this makes sense.
I mean, you can always use the funds to pay those taxes. It's just that when you're paying
the forgiveness,
the Medicare and Social Security portion for the employer and the federal unemployment, that's not going to go into the calculation of the forgiveness. The only taxes that do are usually the state unemployment tax.
And there is state unemployment in your deal, but federal withholding, Social Security, and Medicare are not part of the forgiveness calculation. You would still write those off.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the IRS or the Treasury came out and said, well, we're not going to let you write off the payroll. And we think they're all wet. And Congress thinks they're all wet. In fact, Greeley got really ticked and said, no, we wanted you to be able to write it off.
Right.
So as of right now, the law is ambiguous. The IRS has said our position is going to be you can't write it off. And Jeff and I said our position is going to be, yeah, you can. The clear language of the statute is that it doesn't mention, it wouldn't say that it wasn't included in income and then make it non-deductible. It doesn't make any sense.
It's really kind of strange. They say that if you got a $50,000 PPP loan, mm-hmm. that's not taxable income, but anything you spend it on, you can't deduct.
Yep. That's like they took away the benefit. Like you may as well just deduct it.
Right.
Yeah. So they intended to give you that benefit. We think that this next legislation, the next one that comes out, which will be here pretty quick.
Yeah. I think they're going to have to go back in the session because I know they're
going to have,
they're on a staycation right now.
Yeah. And they like to make messes. I'm going to jump ahead here. Looks like Powell and those guys are nailing it. Somebody says, my home is in my revocable living trust. If I put it into a land trust with Tobias trustee and then assign my beneficial interest to my Wyoming LLC, will this affect my existing HELOC where my parent-child exclusion, California Property 19, Prop 13, real estate taxes? So the first thing is a revocable trust or a land trust are considered grantor trusts, and they're ignored. It's still you. And when you have an LLC and you're the owner of it, assuming that you're the owner or that the living trust is the owner, then it's not included. It will not affect your California Prop 13 because you're still the beneficiary of the trust. You're still the beneficiary of the entity. It has not changed your tax forms at all or anything else. Will it affect your HELOC? No. That's why we use the land trust. Could it, like if you explain to them, hey, by the way, I assigned my land trust to a Wyoming LLC, they may look at you and say, hey, you transferred ownership. And then you're running the risk that the HELOC's going to get all mad. No, the banks are used to dealing with trusts. And that's why we always, whenever there's debt on a property, we tend to like using a trust if it's traditional banking financing. If it's commercial, then they're used to using LLCs. In fact, every transaction I've done in the last bunch of years, I can't even remember the last time they let me close outside of an LLC if I had a loan on it. They wanted it an LLC because they don't want to deal with all your other stuff. Like when you're driving down the road and if you hit a busload of nuns, they don't have to worry about their building getting foreclosed on. I always take out the nuns. They're on my list. All right. Sorry, Jeff, that I just totally Hobart those questions. Here, you can answer this one. I'm so sorry. All right. I have an LLC and a nonprofit. Could they go together?
My question on this is, what is your intent of putting the LLC and nonprofit together? If you want to contribute whatever is in the LLC to the nonprofit, you could do that. But if the LLC has a for-profit purpose and the nonprofit, of course, does not, you can't put them together.
Oh, contraire, mon frère.
Oh, you're going to contradict me. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
No. If it's a foundation, then they're disqualified and they can't. But if I have, for example, Frank and Sherry, and they have their nonprofit that goes out and gets housing for nonviolent women offenders, and their LLCs are all for profit, and they rent to their nonprofit. Or they rent to the state, or they rent to whatever organization. So you can do it, but it has to be an operating nonprofit. And if that confuses you, the difference between a foundation and an operating nonprofit, the question is it doing anything? So when I set up a nonprofit, 99% of the time, it's doing something. It's housing, it's education, it's helping veteran with PTSD. It's all these things. Can I have an outside for-profit entity working with it? Yeah, absolutely, as long as it's arm's length. And what you're going to want to do in that situation is make sure you have outside directors who are saying it's reasonable. So anyway, sorry, Jeff.
No, I was just confused by the could they go together. I didn't know if they meant merging them together or...
You could have an LLC owned by a...
Right.
And we could have an LLC owned by the nonprofit and all that. We applied for an EIDL with our Wyoming holding company. Our rejection letter stated business activity is not eligible. EIDL assistance is available only to a small business engaged in eligible business activity. Yeah, so Leslie, what I'm imagining is that whatever the, what's the number that we use? I forget the term that they have, but they actually have a business activity number. You were using something as a classification. And that's probably something where they said it's not actually doing anything. So what we would tend to do is we would tend to grab a business, because the way EIDL loans work is it's anything you own, anything you even own, have control of, or more than 20% of, any of those, you pick one. And you pick the one that's doing whatever's the most active business, and then you get the loan under that, or the one that's in the greatest need. And they give the loan to that particular one. So you may own four businesses, but you're only getting one EIDL loan. PPP is different, but the EIDL loan is definitely there. Look at this. Somebody wrote me, it's actually taking up an entire page. I'm going to say, Elliot, can you answer that one? Because somebody wrote like a 7-8 prong question. We love them. It's kill me. Sometimes it is pretty funny. I'm tempted to read it, but I just know that we'll be reading all day. All right. How should I handle sales tax within my e-commerce store? Do I follow my state use tax, Michigan, or do I need to get the buyers?
If only it were that easy.
Well, you still have a lot of merchants out there.
First, to clarify, there is a difference between sales tax and use tax.
Yep.
Sales tax is on tax on things you sell, and use tax is on things you buy. For example, if you bought something across the border in Illinois or Indiana, you would pay sales tax in that state, but Michigan wants their sales tax also once you bring that back.
Usually it's if you – wouldn't it be usually if you didn't pay it?
I think it's more likely if you didn't pay it.
So in Washington State, where I lived for a lot of years, people would go down to Oregon. And so they didn't pay sales tax in Oregon, and they bring it home. And Washington says, well, you're using it in my state, and if you didn't pay sales tax, then you have to pay us a use tax. But I think what these guys are looking at is, hey, I may be, let's say I'm in California, and I'm selling merchandise, T-shirts, and I'm selling them in, well, let's see, his state, do I follow? So they're in Michigan. So I'm selling things from Michigan, and somebody in Nevada buys my T-shirt. The question is, do I have to charge sales tax? And they changed the rule. And there's still a lot of fighting going on. But the answer is yes. Nevada has the right to charge sales tax.
Correct.
No matter where you're at. And it used to be nobody would, because they'd say it's an online sale. And then you had everybody, the merchants, screaming, hey, why am I being punished for having a physical store?
And now the states are a little desperate for money, and they're going to be looking for it too. So if you ship to something to California, you're going to have to pay California that sales tax, or actually the buyer is going to be the one paying it, but through you.
Yeah, technically you're receiving it and charging it and accepting it and dispersing it on behalf of the purchaser.
If you send it to someplace like Alaska or New Hampshire where they don't have a sales tax, Michigan likely has what's called a throwback rule, which means if another state's not charging the sales tax, they're going to charge a sales tax.
Yeah.
So it gets a little complicated when you're doing interstate commerce.
Then the question is whether you're drop shipping. So the California companies, in fact, there was a big company, I think it was Barnes & Noble, that kept a big, huge warehouse in right under Tahoe, like right around Carson City, right outside of Carson City, right around there. Big warehouse, and California was still trying to get the tax, saying, hey, you're just trying to get around my tax. And they said, yeah, we did. And it's okay, because they were shipping out of Nevada. And at the time, the issue was, do I have to pay any tax? And the answer was no on merchandise. So this is somewhat evolving area. So what I would say is you may end up paying Michigan. Most people don't. Most people are only going to pay the tax in the area where somebody received it. Mm-hmm. It, depending on what type of services you're doing or like what you're selling on your e-commerce store, if it's physical merchandise, that's one thing. If it's services, then it's going to really depend on whether you're in the area with that individual when you're conducting the service. So if you go to that state, then the state may have a claim. Otherwise, no, there's not going to be that state tax.
And I believe a lot of the larger internet sales companies, Amazon, eBay, and mm-hmm. things like that, will offer help with the sales tax process.
Yeah, there's also some sales tax. It's such a niche that a lot of people are doing it. I think that there's basically services that cater just to sales tax.
Yep.
Here's another book somebody wrote. I'm going to read it. Actually, it's not a book. It's just because I can't make my screen.
I'll be back in 15.
There, yeah. No, it is a little bit of one. I understand that the CARES Act allows me to borrow up to $100,000 or 100% of my vested interest in my 401k account. Although 180 days from the CARES Act enactment, date of March 27th, and that won't owe any penalties or interest if I pay back the loan within 5 years. No. You're going to pay back. If it's paid back within 5 years, you have deferred. You're going to pay interest on those 5 years. You're going to have deferral for one of those 5 years. And there's a bunch of stuff getting run in here that's kind of odd. So I'm just not going to keep reading. I'm going to have someone say, hey, we actually need to do that. You can withdraw $100,000 and under an early withdrawal and take a loan out for up to $100,000 of the remaining balance, if that's the question. It's a little bit hard for me. We're going to have to break that down. Sometimes the tax code gets a little convoluted. Let's see. Here's a good one. Do we have to pay taxes on SBA loans?
Well, normally you never have to pay taxes on loan proceeds, mm-hmm. including the EIDL loan. And I'll give you the one exception is if you don't repay that loan. Somebody's mm-hmm. going to write it off as bad debt, and you're going to have to pay taxes on it.
Unless
there's a statute. The one weirdness that we talked about, the EIDL loan, it doesn't apply to, but the PPP loan, our position and Senator Chuck Grassley's position mm-hmm. on the PPP loans, there's not going to be tax on it.
Well, the statute says you don't have to recognize the forgiveness as income. But then the Treasury says, well, then you can't write it off because you don't have to recognize it as income.
Yeah, they think they found an old back door from a old reg mm-hmm. that had nothing to do with this.
Yeah, so yeah, that is true. They're messing around. There it was something that was a grant, and it was for an airline pilot, and it was a reimbursement, and this is not a reimbursement. So they were doing something else very different. You were getting reimbursed for something, and they said you can't write that off if you get reimbursed for it, which is absolutely true. We always say you can't double dip on a reimbursement, but that's not what this is. This is, hey, we're giving you a loan, and we're going to forgive it, and you don't have to recognize that as income. No, full stop, zero, boom. That income is not income. Okay, now I have deductions. It doesn't say anything except that the money that you spend this loan on, now you can't deduct. That would be stupid. Like, again, they just wrote some stuff in there and they're knuckleheads.
Yeah, so the only way an SBA loan could be taxable is if you defaulted on it.
If you default and they forgive it. So the only one that would actually apply is if you have a PPP loan and none of it's forgiven and you don't pay it back. And they say, forget it, we're not going to collect against you. We're going to give you a 1099 C. Is it a C? What's the one that's there?
Yeah, it's a C.
Yeah, 1099 C, cancellation of indebtedness. Or you get your EIDL loan, which is a portion of that that's you don't have to pay back. If you get the emergency grant up to $10,000, you don't have to pay that back. That lowers the amount of your PPP. That's actually, I think, a question later on that somebody asked. Your PPP forgiveness by whatever amount they give you in the grant. And then let's say that you don't you don't pay back the EIDL loan and they forgive it, which they probably would. SBA is actually pretty easy to deal with if you go through financial hardship. I mean, that's really what they're there for, kind of in a funny way. They're a lender of last resort, and they're there to help you if disasters hit. So sounds like it's almost like the small business assister, you know, assistance program. SNAP or SBAB, SBAP. What is it, SBAP? Small Business Assistance Program? We should coin that. SBAP.
SBAP.
Instead of the SBA. I think I'm funny. All right. We have lots of questions coming in. Pio and Elliot are kicking butt. Somebody says about a DUNS number, and Pio already got it, but I think a DUNS number you will need to have, and if you are bidding on government contracts, for sure. But if you get a DUNS number, don't buy anything from Dun & Bradstreet. They will follow you around and try to get you to buy things forever. He just wrote, I like watching Jeff look at some of the questions, and when they're the entire page, I like watching him flap his arms around and go, what the?
We actually just had one. We had to scroll to see the end of the question.
Yeah, and there's another one. These people love us. All right, I'm going to just go past because what's funny is the next question even here is long. All right. Recently, my mother passed away, and now both my parents are gone. They set up a revocable living trust in which their primary home was held. My brother and I are listed as the successor trustees. The trust document says that it is a grantor trust. My brother and I are in agreement that the house that is owned by the trust will need to be sold. What are the tax ramifications?
Well, everything you say is true about the trust up until the day your mother died. At that point, it became an irrevocable trust. You hate the way I say that, I know.
No, that's perfect.
It became an irrevocable trust and was no longer a grantor trust. It actually turned into a survivor trust or a credit trust or beneficiary trust.
When the first parent passed away, their half became an irrevocable trust.
Right.
The remaining trust remained grantor, which a grantor trust is a fancy way of saying it's taxed the grantor. We ignore it. So it doesn't have to file a tax return.
So at that point, the trust actually owns the home and you and your brother are beneficiaries. Now, I want to see if Toby agrees with me on this. I think I would distribute it to the beneficiaries before I sell it.
I don't think it really matters.
Are they going to see the same step up no matter what?
They're going to see the same step up. So what happens when a spouse passes? And this really depends on whether you're in a separate property state, community property state. Do you own it does the trust own it 100%? Is there a provision in the trust that gifts it to the surviving spouse so that there's a partial step up on the passing of the first spouse?
No spouse here.
Oh, there's... Recently, and now both my parents.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
So dad had to have passed away at some point in the past. And when he passed away, the question is, if it's a separate property state, then half of the basis of the home stepped up. Unless dad passed away and they were joint tenants, went to mom put it in the trust, which I doubt. It sounds like they had everything tied up. And or unless they gifted it over to mom, which case half the basis stepped up and now mom owns the surviving the survivor's trust owns the home, which is how we draft them.
Right.
All of this is really fancy way of saying you won't owe any tax when you sell it, no matter what you do, because the basis of that property, more likely than not, stepped up to the fair market value when mom passed. If they're in a separate property state and if the trust did not address the issue of the home, then the worst case scenario is half of the trust stepped up when your dad passed. I mean, half of the property stepped up. So whatever that half of the value is, so let's say that the house was worth $400,000 when dad passed, then his half would be worth $200,000. And let's say it went up to $500,000. There's an extra $100,000. Mm-hmm. mom's half stepped up to half of the 100, to, or actually the entire rest. It wouldn't matter. No, I guess it would be. Yeah, it'd be 200, 200. His steps up. Her part would still remain the same. And then her would step up to the half of the value of that, or $500,000. So there'd be a $50,000 gain, but your mom lived in it. So she'd be entitled to $250,000 capital gain exclusion, which you get if somebody lived in it when they passed. Forget how many. I think you have to use it within 6 months. I'm not 100% certain on that. But, you know, so you want to talk to an accountant pretty quick to make sure you get the benefit of the step up. But either way, I really doubt you're going to have any tax
dollars. Yeah, if your mother and father lived in that house for 50-some years, you're not going to have a basis of what they originally paid for it. Your basis is going to be stepped up to current value pretty much.
Mm-hmm. And what Jeff said is absolutely 100% correct, is when you're dealing with properties, and it's not just homes, by the way, it's any capital gains in stock or whatever. Mm-hmm. When somebody passes, the basis steps up. Fair market value when they pass. So, you know, so it's always pretty, like, it's a bad situation personally, but there is a silver lining, and the tax treatment's good. How do you treat the installment sale with a progressive interest over the period of 10 years? If you have progressive interest, I'm not 100% certain what that means, but you have interest that may be growing.
I'm assuming that the interest rate goes up.
Mm-hmm, that's what I think too.
But you have your installment sale and you figure out what the capital gain is on that installment sale. Mm-hmm. Now, your payments, say you have $100,000 you sold something for, but your payments are $1,100, $1,200, $1,300 a year. Part of that is interest, and that is peeled off separately on your tax return.
Mm-hmm.
So it really has nothing to do with the installment sale itself. It's just the interest income you're earning from the outstanding debt.
You're paying tax on income. You're paying tax on capital gains. You do not pay tax on return of your basis. And if you don't make an election to treat it as an installment sale, right, don't you have to elect?
Yeah, you usually do that by filing the Form 6252 for the installment sale.
So you could choose not to and just say, hey, I'm going to pay the capital gains this year, even though you're not getting the money yet. And then your capital gains requirement is done. You've paid it, even though you haven't received the money for the capital gains. The interest, however, is going to play out upon receipt and as you receive it over the years. So a lot of people assume that the installment sale is just automatic. You have to file that form. Like Jeff,
correct.
Jeff mentions it because he does it all the time. You still have to remember to say, hey, I'm carrying a note. And then Jeff's going to say, well, I need to know what your basis is. And they're going to say, what do I care? It's a $100,000 note. And you're going to say, well, we have to calculate what the capital gains is, what the depreciation recapture is, what the return of basis is, what the interest is, and we're going to put it on a little spreadsheet, and then we're going to figure out what they're paying you every year, and we're going to have to do that calculation. So, isn't that fun? Somebody says, any updates on the withdrawal loans from the Thrift Savings Plan? I have not seen them say anything.
TSP has been very quiet about that.
They said they were following the CARES Act, and then they've yet to, I haven't looked at TSP this week, but.
So if you have a TSP, you really need to be talking to your plan administrator.
Talk to your administrator. I think that they're allowing them, but it wouldn't take too long to look it up. They're usually putting it right on their front of their website. Can you accept the EIDL loan if you already have received PPP loan? Full stop. Yes. Will there be any issues with PPP forgiveness if you accept the EIDL? It depends on if you receive the emergency cash grant. If you receive the emergency cash grant, then that portion, because you never have to pay back the grant, whatever amount that is, let's say it's $5,000, you would subtract off of your forgivable PPP amount. So you would have to pay back. So if you get it's basically, hey, I gave you $2, but only one of it is free. The other one you have to pay back. So that EIDL emergency cash grants, the max that you can get is $10,000. The max they're giving on that loan right now, it says $2 million, but it's $150,000. And they just reopened EIDL loans last week, mm-hmm, after a two-month hiatus because they were so backlogged from April. So we're just starting to get them rolling again. But we've gotten millions of them for our clients. It's kind of fun.
So I know you could get the EIDL loan, and then you could apply for the PPP loan and roll the EIDL into it.
When, if it was before March 27th, you'd roll it into the PPP.
And what was the advantage of that? Because the EIDL has, I know the EIDL has a higher interest rate, but it's got a much longer payback period.
Right. So first off, the EIDLs, you could apply for both, but the previous EIDL was a 30-year loan at 3.75. If you rolled it into the PPP, you could get it forgiven.
Okay.
So the PPP did not exist prior to March 27th. And so they said, hey, if you were, you know, in early March and you were shut down and quarantined and all this stuff, and we gave you a loan, you can apply again. You could roll that existing loan into a PPP if you use it to pay your people, and you can come back and apply for another EIDL loan.
But that was only if you got the EIDL before March 27th.
Correct. Right. Otherwise, it's just the emergency advance that they interact with. I hope that makes sense to y'all. I know that we tend to use verbiage quickly, like EIDL just means economic injury disaster loan, and PPP means paycheck protection program. So if anybody's worried about that, then I apologize. What if Edward Jones said I'll have to pay my Roth and traditional IRA back with interest, even if I'm being affected by COVID? So if somebody's borrowing money, you can't borrow money from a Roth or a traditional.
IRAs.
Yeah. So if you're taking money back, then Edward Jones is wrong. You don't pay interest because you can't take a loan from an IRA. So sorry, but they're absolutely 100% incorrect. You can take an early distribution and you avoid the 10% penalty and you avoid tax on it if you pay it back within 3 years. And there is no interest. It is treated as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. So Bernadette, they're wrong. There. I like to say Edward Jones is wrong sometimes. They have really great mutual funds for them. What is the paperwork that needs to be filed when withdrawing from an IRA so you can avoid the 10% penalty if you pay it back within 3 years? Joyce, it's a certification of need, and they have to accept it. And that's all you have to do. The rest of it is you pay it back. Now, I'll tell you what the Treasury says. The Treasury says you need to recognize that income over the 3 years. So you should recognize a third of it in. So if you take $100,000 out, you'd recognize $33,000 this year, $33,000 next year. You'd pay it back before the end of 2022, and you'd go back and amend your 2020 and 2021, which we think is
crazy.
Crazy. Yeah. We're not going to do anything. Treasury can say what they want. That's not law. So they're trying to interpret, and they're using the Katrina language that was done in that particular case in 2005. And they're different, you know, but they're just, again, Treasury. Congress tries to fix things, and then the bureaucrats try to destroy it. And I'm not going to go down. I get mad. Am I able, like we still have here in Nevada, you have people that were entitled to the federal unemployment that still haven't received it. That was authorized 3 months ago, and it was an emergency, and they still haven't received it. And our governor is marching around like he's the savior of all people, and they're really good at shutting you down and messing with you if you're trying to reopen. But man, they just really left some people out to dry, and they get a pass for some reason. I don't get it. I am able to purchase real estate with my solo 401k account. Fantastic. Solo 401k is just a 401k owned by a couple or one party or two partners, and rent the house out to my brother, Jeff.
Sure.
I love that you said that.
You buy within the 401k, and one important caveat, you got to charge fair rent to your brother.
Yeah. So a lot of you guys are probably thinking that's a disregarded, or I mean, a disqualified party. Hey, you can't do that. Your brothers and uncles and friends and in-laws, you can rent too. You can do business. You can loan them money. It's just like Jeff says, it has to be fair market value. Otherwise, they'll tax them on the below fair market value. And by the way, federal AFR rates is where you say friends and family. The rates right now, about 1%. So charge them. You can charge them a small interest. But if it's my brother, I'm jacking it up.
Yeah, if it's $500,000 house, you can't charge them $100 a month for that.
No. Don't charge him 18 either. That's just mean.
No. I don't know. My brother, I might.
Depends on whether he beat you up when you were a kid. Then you jack it up. Anyway, so that's the answer that nobody expects. There, you have to actually read the rules, and you'll see that lineal descendants going up and down. So your parents are disqualified, your kids are disqualified, your spouse's parents are disqualified, your grandparents are disqualified, your grandkids are disqualified. But you can go horizontal all day long. It sounds really bad in Vegas. Sometimes I don't even. All right. Do you know what are special circumstances to qualify for an increase in EIDL? We have collateral assets for $2.5 million and a requested increase to $1.8 as a small loan received. Well, here's what I would say. This would be special, first off, if you're being affected. But here's what's going on. The EIDL loans are being capped right now at $150,000 no matter what, and they have millions of them that they're stuck on. So I would go outside of the EIDL and look at other financing. And I hate to say that, but the SBA is focused 100% solely on these EIDL loans, and they're trying to get as many of them out, and they can't mess around with anything large, at least not that we're seeing. The banks themselves just put out $600 billion of cash under the PPPs, and they're getting paid back every day. And the Federal Reserve set up a special purpose entity to buy more loans from banks under the Main Street program, so there's another $600 billion. So if you can do the math there, we're talking about over $1.4 trillion of cash that's being out there in the banks that they're going to have access to sell or to loan. And the interest rates they're paying right now on that money is 0 to 25 basis points, so 0.25%. So there's going to be other opportunities for you, especially if you're hurting. The Main Street, you'd have to have EBITDA, your earnings before income tax, depreciation, and amortization. You'd have to be, it'd be four times that amount or six times that amount, depending on what program it is. But there's opportunities for you. What I would really recommend is that if you're not in our CARES program, you talk to our people, and we do have a funding community, and talk to somebody about seeing whether there's anybody there. You know, give them your scenario and seeing whether we have any lenders in there, or just talk to your local banker and see if they have any other, anything else. SBA is, as far as I'm concerned, they're just right now, they're so far behind. They're two and three months behind, guys.
Well, and the collateral is going to make no difference with the SBA, but it may make a difference with the banks.
Mm-hmm. Well, the SBA collateralizes the EIDLs.
But oh, fully. I did not know that.
Yeah, they don't do a personal guarantee or on any of on the EIDLs, but they do collateral. Anything over $25,000, they have the right to put collateral. What they're doing is filing UCCs. And they make you pay $100 to file the UCC. So, I mean, it's not horrible. Somebody asked, is a land trust a revocable trust? Yes, it is. It's nothing more. I mean, trust. It's a grantor, trustee, and a beneficiary. And so when you have an irrevocable one, it's just basically saying, hey, we gave the asset to the trust. I can't have it back. And, you know, chances are you have to be careful about whether you're a trustee and you're making somebody else a beneficiary. If it's revocable, it just means I can change it at any time I want.
Yeah.
I could also make it defective, which means it doesn't file a tax return. It's treated as though it was revocable for tax purposes, but it's irrevocable. Like, there's all sorts of fun stuff. Trusts are trusts. You know, so people call them dynasty trust, share remainder trust, land trust, personal property trust, living trust. All it is descriptive language for a trust.
Well, like the survivor trust, I know I've heard at least a half dozen different terms just for that one.
Yeah, you have AB trust, you have all sorts of fun stuff. Yeah, well, usually I use decedent and survivor. So the decedent's trust is the person who passed, and then the survivor is the person who survived. You have the marital exclusion trust. Like, you used to have to mess around with these things a lot more than you do now because the federal estate tax exclusion is so high. But expect that to come into play here again. Let's see what else we have. Any thoughts on question two? I have no idea, Francis. I'm so sorry. Thanks. Avoiding Schedule C makes life easier. Oh, somebody's asking. Schedule C is harder to do. Like, I'll ask Jeff. Here, you guys. Jeff, is a Schedule C harder than an 1120S? To do a corporate tax return? Which one is harder, the S return or the Schedule C?
I'm going to say the Schedule C is going to be easy. They're both going to have the same exact information on them. Mm-hmm. The Schedule C is going to be easier simply because it's a schedule on your 1040. It's not a complete return in itself.
Just because you're not. All right. But as far as the data on it.
On the data on it, it's no hard. One's no harder than the other.
Yeah.
Most of the work is actually not in the return. A lot of it's just in the accumulation of information.
Yep. But if I gave you. All right, well, I'll ask it a little bit of a different way. If I was going to say, which is going to take you longer, doing Francis's personal return or doing a corporate return, which one on average is always going to be longer than the other?
Oh, that depends. I mean, if it's the same business in both of them, I think the 1040 is going to take longer in total than that business return is.
Yeah. What we see is that the personal returns, at least according to our data, it's about four times as long that they're on average, four times as long as a corporate return. But that's your really complicated personal returns too. And that's also your really complicated corporate returns. A really big, $1 million corporation shouldn't take much, if you have good data, isn't going to take much longer than a $100,000 corporation.
Correct.
Right. And if somebody is doing a Schedule C, and they're not keeping good books and records, you're going to have a mess no matter what.
And that's a good point, because we see a lot of our smaller entities take a lot more work just because of poor books and records.
Yep. Let's see. And then Francis says, avoiding Schedule C makes life easier. It's a relief that I don't have to file a Schedule C if I use a single member LLC. That's not exactly true. If you are a business, you're going to have to file a tax return for that business no matter what. I have a property owned by an LLC, which is owned by an S-Corp. So pretty basic structure. I have an LLC that's owned by an S-Corp, so that LLC is probably disregarded to the S-Corp. I'm selling this property and want to make a charitable contribution during the closing. Can I dual close and sell the property to the charity and have the charity sell the property to the final buyer?
I understand what we're doing here, but I would almost rather donate the property or the LLC, the whole LLC, to the nonprofit.
I would, yeah, I'm with you. I'd put the LLC in the nonprofit, and what you'd end up with is you have to get an appraisal on the LLC if it's over 5,000. So if you have a piece of property, unless it's like a really tiny piece of property worth less than 5,000, you'd get an appraisal on it. That gives you a value, so you have a value on that LLC, and that's going to be your charitable deduction. It's the fair market value. Doesn't matter whether you sell it to the charity. Like, you don't want to sell it to the charity, first off.
Yeah, absolutely not.
You want to give it to the charity and let the charity sell it to the final buyer, because you're going to get a deduction based on the fair market value, and the charity's not going to recognize any income. So we see this quite often. I actually had this. I had a highly appreciated stock that was annoying, and I was like, all right, this was a an overnight success in 20 years type stock that I was getting out of finally. And it wasn't paying anything, and it ran up a whole bunch. It was valuable, and it went public, and it had a decent value. And I just sat on it for a lot of years. Then I said, you know what? I'd rather have the charitable deduction. So I gave it to charity, sold it out of the charity. Charity now has the money, but my deduction was the value of the stock on that day.
As far as doing a close and selling the property and contributing to the charity at the same moment,
you wouldn't
want to do that.
Yeah.
At best, in that case, you would sell the property, recognize the gain on your own return, and then contribute what you want to the charity with the cash proceeds.
You lose so much benefit.
Yeah, you do.
So it's like this. If I sell my stock and I know I'm going to get treated as long-term capital gains, and I sell $10,000 worth of stock, and you know, and let's say my long-term capital gains is 15%, so I have to pay $1,500. We'll pretend I don't have state tax or anything else. So I just... I pay $1,500 in tax. That gives me $8,500 left to give to charity. So I give it. I get a deduction for $8,500. Congratulations. So I had taxable long-term capital gains of $10,000, and I have a tax deduction of $8,500. If I just give the stock to the charity, I now have a $10,000 tax deduction, and I have zero capital gains.
Right.
So way better off. Before we answer this next question, we're going to go back to the Q&A. Online, just to knock a couple of these out. With the CARES Act, can I use up to $100,000 of my self-directed IRA to make this more interesting? Yeah, you can use up to $100,000 as an early withdrawal of your self-directed IRA. If it's a Roth, you don't have to worry about it at all because there's no penalty or tax on a Roth. If you, I think it's 5 years, but the 10% penalty is only, it's only on traditional. Mm-hmm. The 401k, you could take $100,000 out and you can also borrow money. So Martin, you could borrow, you can get $200,000 out of a 401k if you have $200,000 in it. So if you have $200,000 sitting in there, literally, you could take the whole thing out and not pay anything right now. You'd have to get half of it back within 3 years and to avoid any penalty. The rest of it you'd pay back over the 6 years. So you'd start paying it back after the first year, and then over 5 years you'd pay it back. And you pay it back with a little bit of interest. It'd be about 4% interest. So yeah, you could absolutely get it. Somebody asks, if the loans are forgiven, PPP and EIDL, isn't that income? So the EIDL isn't forgiven, but the PPP is, and no, it is not taxable income. The Congress and the CARES Act says it's not taxable income. So they actually wrote that you don't have to pay tax on that. Somebody says, so GAAP doesn't matter with these loans. I'm not sure. Oh, I see what you're saying. Generally accepted accounting principles, they do matter. I don't know which loans, Jeff, you're talking about. This is a Jeff online.
With a forgiven loan, like the PPP, say you take out or you get $100,000 loans, whole amount is forgiven. For GAAP purposes, or actually for any accounting purposes, you're going to recognize that as income for financial statement purposes because you're going to put the loan on your books and then you're going to move it to income. For tax purposes, it's not included. It's separated.
Absolutely. Here's a good one. If you're a 50-50 partnership and you don't have employees, just distribution to members, can we use 100% of the PPP received for member distributions? Yeah. The amount of forgiveness is capped at your so when you're applying for the loan, they're going to use your net income and they're going to cap it at $100,000 a year per partner. So you'd have a cap of for each person at about $8,000 a month? I forget what it is.
It's generally a good idea to distribute it at regular intervals.
Yeah, it's about $25,000 per member. So if you got a $50,000, let's see, what is it? It's $50,000 PPP loan. Yeah, you can distribute it all to yourselves. And over that 24 weeks, yeah, you're going to easily get that full forgiveness. So, yay, Marco, right? Somebody says, I have an 8-prong question. Yeah, email it to it. All right, this is a follow-up on the financing. I am financing as a trust better. You would, Sam, you would actually finance it in your individual name, put it in a trust. So you finance, once you're done, even with the same closing party, you could say, could you put it in a trust for me? But they're going to make you close in your individual name solely because the banks don't want to deal with somebody who's a trustee for somebody else. And they just did a loan and you just, you could play games with the trust. So it's almost always going to be an LLC that you close in or individually. In a traditional bank's only going to deal with individuals. If you're doing portfolio lending, they will do it straight to the LLC, but they're not going to do anything less than $1 million either. So a little different. Do I have to have an LLC or a corporation listed on my W-9 form? Or can I just use my traditional IRA and use that information to purchase tax liens?
Short answer is you don't have to have an LLC or corporation. You can buy and sell liens, tax liens through your IRA. Have you seen where they usually need to be self-directed?
Yeah, they're going to have to be self-directed. Okay. You're not going to be able to get TD Ameritrade to buy tax liens for you. You're going to have to go through a self-directed IRA company like IRA Club or one of those. Dennis is really cool. That's IRA Club. He's up in Chicago, but
I kind of like the idea of having the LLC within the IRA. Mm-hmm. It has its own EIN and so forth.
That's called a checkbook IRA. You could do that, especially if you're going to possibly own the properties where the IRA sets up an LLC underneath it. Or if you want checkbook control and you want to avoid the LLC entirely, use a 401k. And you just make a 401k as part of any of your businesses, roll your traditional IRA into that 401k, and now you don't need the you don't need a custodian. You're your own trustee.
Yeah. So on the W-9, if it's an IRA, most IRAs do not have an EIN. So you're going to use the EIN for the custodian. You're going to mark the W-9 as an exempt entity. Mm-hmm. It's pretty straightforward. A 401k, I agree, works a little better that way.
I'm going to make sure I didn't miss. Oh, we already answered that one. Good. Someone told me that I missed something. Good question that just didn't just come in, and we're still behind by about 30 minutes on the questions.
Just came up on our screen.
Yeah. I am a sole proprietor providing services, and if I file for a PPP loan using Schedule C, will I have to pay taxes on those funds in 2021, even if those funds are used to pay income? The answer is no. The whole idea of the PPP is that you receive it. And by the way, there's about $100 billion left. I was convinced that it was all going to be gone within days of the second tranche. And what it was all these big companies hobarted all the money in the first part and then gave a bunch of it back. So now they're scared because they don't want to be called to the carpet for taking all the money, which there was already a whole bunch that did. Harvard did, Penn did, Lakers did. But yeah, so Nadine, you'll get that money and you'll never have to pay it back. That's free money to you. So I would actually recommend that you do it. My siblings are rewriting a trust to protect about 7 low-value rental homes in California. Should the LLC be filed in California and the holding company in Nevada, Wyoming? It depends on what you guys are shooting for. That's generally the way you do it, is you'd have what I might do just to make it easier for you guys, because it sounds like the trust might be just running it to you guys. I don't know if you're filing a trust return. Sounds like they may. I'm just kind of wondering about the 7 low value rentals. I'm wondering how they're owned.
Yeah, I'm wondering what kind of trust they're in.
Yeah, if they're in a trust, there's a way to minimize the tax in California. And whenever I see a trust, I'm wondering whether it's an irrevocable trust. It might make sense to take it out of the state, or have the state in state have grantor trust pointed to a parent trust.
Would you say California is an exception because they get a little quirky when there's trustees? And
yep, when there's trustees out of the state, they can't tax it unless it gets distributed to the beneficiaries. So if it's an irrevocable trust, we might be able to avoid it entirely. Did the deadline for Roth conversions get extended also?
No, the deadline for Roth conversions is December 31st.
You have to have it done during the year, yeah.
Now, if we're talking the deadline for Roth contributions and traditional IRA contributions, those were extended to July 15th.
July 15th for HSAs.
Yep.
For IRAs. The 401k, the employer can contribute up till it files its tax return. So those could go all the way to September 15th, right?
Corporation could go to October 15th.
S-Corp would be.
S-Corp and partnerships are September.
Yeah, September, but a C-Corp you're thinking?
This October 15th.
All right, October 15th.
So they switched things around a couple of years ago.
They did that weird four.
The weird deadlines now.
They're messing around with it. So you could go out quite a ways. And yeah. I always tell the story of the guy that was yelling at me to file his S-Corp on time. He goes, I've never been late. And he wanted it done on March 15th. And I said, well, I understand that you've never been late. You're not actually late. Your tax return isn't due until September 15th. They're asking, you could do it now, or they give you an automatic extension. But if you give us that time, we could fix things, or we could look to see, you know, depending on how bad the tax hit's going to be on your individual. But I would determine what your individual taxes are first before I file the S-Corp. Like, let's just prepare it, file an extension. Your taxes are due technically on April 15th, right? Your tax payments are due. They extended that to July 15th as well. But your tax return is not due until October 15th as an individual, for example. And he forced us to file the S-Corp. And then sure enough, during the summer, he came up and said, my income was higher. I have cash now. What can I do? And I said, we could get in a time machine and go back to before March 15th. And you could listen to me when I said, don't file it. I said, we could still make contributions to that 401k right now for a quarter of your salary. And we went like, it wasn't a small, it was like $17,000-$18,000 that we could have contributed and had another deduction. And after that, guess who filed an extension every year?
The other nice thing that they did in regards to qualified retirement plans, it really doesn't take effect until 2021, but allowing employers to start a plan after the year is already over.
That's going to be huge. That's going to allow us to go get some of these monies back. Like, you could do a SEP now, but I'm a big believer. Like, SEP, you have unrelated debt finance income. You have to have a custodian. You have you can't borrow money out of it. Like, there's things that are limitations. And if you just did a 401k, then you don't have all those headaches. So I like the 401ks. Somebody says, I run my real estate realtor business as an S Corp. Congratulations, that's good. I'm considering entering the real estate investor arena to invest and have my clients invest in rehab properties and list those properties for sale as their listed agent. I would use a local rehab mentorship program to gain hands-on knowledge. Would I be able to deduct the cost of this program as an expense to my S Corp? Well, Eduardo, it's interesting. It's $195, and is it going to benefit? Is it giving you a new business, or are you using it to generate more business for your existing business? And I'd say if you're joining AREA and doing their mentorship program so you can get more clients so you can sell their properties, that's clearly deductible, period.
No, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. So, yeah, you'll be able to run it through there. If I was worried at all, then I would just set up a separate company to do the rehabs. And frankly, if you are working with clients, you know, you're going to have to disclose. And if you're going to participate in the deal, I would always set those deals up as separate JVs and make sure that they're separate, either LLCs or corporations. If I'm flipping, I'm probably making a parent corporation that you guys all own and have the LLCs in each flip to keep the liability at bay. Can owners take draws from an SBA and apply the forgiveness on an SBA loan? Yes, it's exactly why they're giving them. And they are giving them to the small guys too. In fact, under the PPP program, like almost 90% now are smaller, less than 10 employees. Like they finally came and gave those guys money, which was part of the frustration in the beginning. It took about a month before they would actually give the small guys money. Can you take a distribution in the loan at the same time in a 401k? And if so, how much? Yeah, you can. And it's up to $200,000. Let's keep going on. Toby's going long again. Why'd you let me? I thought we were going to be done in an hour, Jeff. Yeah.
No, I keep stopping you and asking
I thought
questions.
We cut down all the questions, too.
Oh, yeah, we did.
So is it just...
It's just us.
You're being kind. What is the best way to handle a deceased parent's 401k and pension benefit to minimize the tax burden? I was wondering if opening a solo 401k would be a good option.
And the answer to that is no, you can't do that.
Nope. You're going to have to keep it in the IRA or whatever. I think they have a 401k. They're probably going to convert
it. Can they still leave it in the 401k?
I think you're going to have to roll it out.
One time, even when they had to stretch IRAs, and mm-hmm. you could leave it into the 401k and have the money taken out over your lifetime. Most plans are not going to want to do that.
I think they'll do it for a spouse.
Yes.
But if it's a child, so a deceased parent's 401k, they're going to end up rolling that into an IRA, and it's going to be the deceased parent's IRA for your benefit. And the SECURE Act that passed mm-hmm. at the end of the year says you have to take that over 10 years as a max.
Correct.
You could take it in 5. You could take it, is it the parent's life expectancy? Like you have a couple different drop-down options.
Yeah, but the options are really narrow now since the SECURE Act.
It's max 10 years, but I think you could go if the parent was younger and they had more than 10 years of life expectancy, I believe you could take it over the life expectancy if it was long. But I think 10 years is going to be the max.
Yeah, what you're normally going to do is you're going to take this distribution, roll it into an IRA, but you're going to have to pull all that money, and it will be designated as an inherited IRA, which means it can't go anywhere else.
Right, and I think it actually has the parent's name on it.
Yeah, and you'll have to have all that money distributed to you over the next 10 years.
Yep. Somebody says, what can I use the idle money for and whatnot? If I'm a real estate sales, can I invest in real estate mentorship program? So, Eduardo, the idle money is supposed to be to cover your damages as a result of the national disaster. So if I have $2 I can spend, and one of them came from idle, then I'm saying that money is being used for my overhead, my expenses, my operating costs. If I ended up having additional costs, cleaning, et cetera, as a result of the pandemic, then I would cover those. And then I would use that, my other money that I'm making, and call it, you know, I'd use that for the mentorship. What you can't use the idle money for is distributions to yourself, bonuses. If you have a PPP, you're not even supposed to use it on payroll. If you do not have a PPP loan, then you could use it for your payroll, your utilities, your rent, all those things. You're not supposed to use it to pay off a bunch of debts. It's basically, hey, we just got hit with this COVID. It really, you know, made a mess of my business. I really need this money, and I'm using it to continue to keep my business above water. as a result. Like, there's lots of expenses I have to pay every month. And if I didn't have this money, I'm laying people off and I'm closing down parts of my business.
So is it fair to say that I can make payments with that money on my equipment loan?
On the
regular schedule payments,
on the
but yeah. I couldn't pay that loan off.
No, you can't pay the principal down. I think you could still use it on it. But remember, the EIDL you're paying back over 30 years at 3.75%. So it's not like they just want to make sure that you don't take the money and go buy a Rolex and a Rolls Royce. There was a guy who did that. He took the PPP and ran out and bought himself a new car and some other things. And they're prosecuting him. They're a little ticked off.
I think there's a line... waiting line now for people going to court to be prosecuted.
David asked, hey, David, they asked, any thoughts on the current discussion in the Senate to change the charitable contribution? So they already made it 100%. And they made the amount of the above the line charitable contribution for cash at $300. So you don't like you can do the standard deduction and still write off a charitable donation up to $300. So it's actually pretty potent. It's actually really...
They should have done that.
And then I can write off 100% of my AGI with charitable contributions. So I can really give myself some benefit. Somebody asked, if we get an EIDL loan, will it lower our FICO score and our credit? The credit pull might, but they don't report it to you because you're not a guarantor. So the EIDL loan, they do pull your credit to determine eligibility to make sure that they're going to get paid back. And so that's the only impact, but it's not listed on your credit. It's collateralized loan only. Would it be better to have an S-Corp or C-Corp, and when should I think about converting, as in how much revenue should I be making before I even start thinking about that? Do you have a rule of thumb you use?
I look at it a little differently from how much am I making as to what I'm using them for. I like to ask corporations for businesses with operations, especially if they have employees and such. The C-Corp, I kind of like for my real estate flipping or for management companies and things of that nature. If you're making substantial money and you want a way to give key employees ownership and all, I think the C-Corp is a good way to do that.
Mm-hmm. S-Corps are allowed to have 100 shareholders, and they have to be the same flavor of shares, ordinary shares. You're not able to, common stock, you're not going to have a whole bunch of shares that have preferred payouts and things like that. You can't do that with an S-Corp. An S-Corp has to be owned by people. You could potentially have an LLC that's disregarded own it, but I think you're playing with fire. Mm-hmm. An S-Corp is supposed to be a person, and they're supposed to be a U.S. resident. It could be alien resident. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you could, as long as you're here in the U.S., you could actually be a foreigner. So what is that called? A resident alien.
Resident alien, correct.
You could still own an S-Corp, but otherwise a foreigner can't own it if they're outside the country. So it gets kind of ticky-tacky there. But let's just say it's you. Then the only thing I'm going to ask somebody is, do you need the money? If you need the money out of it, an S-Corp is the easiest way to go because you don't have to write yourself a paycheck every time. You write yourself a paycheck once a quarter, once a year, once a month, whatever you want. And then the rest of the money you just take. Whether you take it out of the company or not, it's still taxed to you. And it's going to go onto your 1040. Technically, it's going to go onto your Schedule E, your second page two of your Schedule E. C-Corp, on the other hand, pays its own tax at 21%. And if you take money out of a C-Corp, you're taxed on it, unless it's returning money that you loaned or it's returning your contribution. Otherwise, you're paying wages or it's a dividend, and dividends are taxed at long-term capital gains rates. So the C-Corp does get the nudge with regards to the ability to write off health and dental and vision. Mm-hmm. Expenses 100%, whereas an S-Corp, the only deduction you're going to get is the insurance premium, and that's actually going to come off of your 1040 for self-insurance premiums.
The only thing I'm not a fan of is when converting from a C-Corp to an S-Corporation, if that C-Corp's been in existence for a little while mm-hmm. and has captured a lot of losses.
You're stuck.
You're kind of stuck. I would rather, if you really think a corporation's going to be profitable, I think I'd burn up my old losses first.
You know, and when we teach the classes, I sometimes use a slide with a bunch of guys in unitards that are running around, and it's pretty nasty, like it's gnarly. It's a bunch of dudes in these really tight, it looks like swimsuit models, right? these guys are not in shape. So it's like, it's one of those things that's going to etch in your mind. We always say one size doesn't fit all.
It's not me.
Yeah. We actually superimposed Michael Bowman's face on one of the guys. And he realized that in an event. He did not think it was funny. But it looks just like Michael. He's running around. The reason I bring that up is you really need to do the math on your situation. I wouldn't give you a general. What I would say is, hey, if you're making less than $30,000 and you're not in a high-risk profession, use an LLC that's disregarded. You could probably get by as a sole proprietor. Anything above that, you're probably going to be better off because you're going to save money as an S-corp because you're going to save on the self-employment tax. Mm-hmm. And then if you're over probably $250,000 where you don't need the money anymore, then I'm not saying convert an S-corp to a C. I'm saying maybe add a C-corp and use two. I make my money in my S-corp and my C-corp manages it, runs and, you know, does all my accounting, does my marketing, whatever. And now I can play split the income if I need.
Right.
So rather than have me all that money hitting my tax return and me going, oh, what should I do with it to lower my tax bill? I just make sure I move in money into the C-corp and I have a mechanism to do it. Hey, somebody mentioned the TSP that is going to start in late July. So thank you, Lynn, for doing that. I'm assuming that somebody just went onto the website and checked it out, but they've said they were going to do it. They just haven't told us when. It sounds like next month. So
it's the government.
It's the government. What else does somebody have? They have a whole bunch. I was reading all these questions. I'm just going to keep going on. I think we're getting close to. No, we're not. So let's keep going on. I thought for a second maybe we were getting close. How did we go over today? It feels like it's been 10 minutes.
So those really long questions we had to read.
All right.
I'm not taking the blame for this.
If we do get an idle loan, by the way, I'm going to go back one slide. If we do get a lot, because I can't not answer these. If we do get an idle loan and pay interest on it, will the interest be tax deductible? Yes. There we go. Established a C-Corp in September. Up to that point, we had significant educational expenses, over $40,000. Since there's no registered income, how long in terms of tax years can I carry these startup expenses? How far can I carry them forward, basically?
You're going to amortize those expenses over 15 years. You're going to get a deduction for the first $5,000 in most cases. Mm-hmm. And then if we're supposing $40,000, that's your total startup cost.
What if they contributed $40,000 and the company paid the educational expenses and it was a deduction?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
There's no limitation to carrying it forward. It used to be a 20-year carry forward, right?
Used for the NOLs, yes, but yeah. That went away.
So now you can carry them forward forever?
Yes.
So how long can you carry forward? Forever. Easy answer. You can carry it forward. You don't have to worry about losing your startup expenses. What Jeff is saying is...
I was reading it differently.
Yeah, it is if you had pre-incorporation expenses and you were writing it off, you take the deduction if you incurred it before you set up your company. You take that over 15 years. And that creates a loss that you can carry forward forever.
And there are no hobby loss rules on corporations.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. You can't deduct losses.
Yep. Hey, I'm looking at a question that came up online. Can a real estate rental property owner with a Schedule E but no Schedule C apply for an SBA PPP loan? You cannot, but you can do an EIDL. So you can't do the PPP for sure. Can a partial EIDL be rolled into a PPP before 327? Yep. I think we answered that one a long time ago. Bad, Toby. Does the rent income stay in the 401k? So they're obviously talking about if you rent it to your brother, yes, the income would have to stay inside the 401k if you rent a house to your brother. Where can I get a copy of the self-certification form for the IRA withdrawal? We have one. We can get it to you if you need it, Joyce. We have one. All you're doing is you're certifying that, hey, this is hurting me, blah, blah, blah. There's some magic language, and we just basically have a certification, and they have to accept your certification. So I'm reading somebody's getting creative here. Pay it back and distribute it to yourself. Somebody has that's really smart. Hold on for a second. I'm going to go to this one. Can I buy a $100,000 house inside a 401k with leverage, then distribute the house to myself for 3 years under CARES? In other words, you don't give yourself $100,000 cash. You give yourself the house. Live in it and then put it back in 2022 with no tax.
I can answer the last question. You cannot put it back because there's contribution limits.
Yep. Well, he's paying back the $100,000 loan. He's taking.
I don't think you can loan in kind, though. I think you can only loan cash.
We have to look at that. That's interesting.
I've never ran across that, so I really don't know the answer to that.
All right, John, you're our type of guy, so that's a good one.
Go ahead, stretch our brains. We can take it.
You know, I'm going to look that up, because if you can do in kind instead of that's pretty cool. Catherine, your EIDL loan will not show up on your credit report because it's not a personal guarantee. So it's not going to affect you. Where we've seen the EIDL loans pop up is people that have commercial loans on their properties and they applied for PPP or EIDL. And the hard money lender says, hey, you can't have seconds and you can't have anybody else coming in here and attaching anything that's in these properties. So they get all cranky about it. Look at this one. Another creative person out there. Can I take a $100,000 distribution from my 457 plan? That's like a 401k. And contribute it to my housing nonprofit under the 100% HEI charity contribution amount. So technically you can, but when you take the money out, the $100,000 distribution, you're certifying that you've been damaged.
And I was going to say that.
So what you're going to have to say is, hey, I've been hurt and I'm using the $100,000 for my hurt. And then I happen to make another $100,000 contribution. I would just make sure that they're not anywhere near each other. But technically, yeah, you could. But you're certifying that I've been financially imperiled, so you're going to have a little bit of an issue. The better route would be, instead of taking the distribution, is borrow the money and make the contribution and then pay back the loan, because they don't care what you do with the loan proceeds. But if you want to avoid the 10% penalty, you got to show that you needed it. Great questions.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, we're at it. You guys are smart. There's some really good questions. I'm going to leave it at that because we're beyond an hour and a half. And hi, Sherry. I see a whole bunch of people. Disregarded entity, by the way, that just means a LLC that we ignore for tax purposes. And I see people are answering all these questions. This is really great. You guys have done a fantastic job. Thank you for coming on and sharing with us. Oh, by the way, you can always get replays in your Platinum portal. Or we also, I think the last three or four, we always keep up for you guys to grab. I'm not sure if we put restrictions on it or not. We have a lot. We've done well over 100 of these. You can go find them on our podcast. And then don't forget that you still can come and do our Infinity Investing on Saturday, June 27th, all day, fun day, learn how to make money. For those of you guys who don't know, all of the principals here at Anderson, we all invest. And I myself have over 200 properties. I always forget what we have. We have a bunch of apartments and commercial, and then Patty has to deal with my nonsense because I'm like, hey, we're buying 20 properties here. Then she has to deal with it.
You don't know the number, but Patty does.
Yeah, we have a list somewhere, but you guys know how it is. You have these properties. I just look at the cash flow. But we teach you how to do all that fun stuff. And by the way, we're picking up properties now in the $50,000 range that are making $750 a month in rent. If you want to play along and come along and learn how to do that, and even if you want to, I have a great group that you can go out and they will teach you this stuff ins and out. They do not charge even for it. So if you want to do it, you have to be part of our little Infinity Network. It's free to be in the Infinity Investing Workshop. And if you want to be part of our little network, it's a whopping, it's less than $10 a month. But all we do is we goof around and look at investments. We invest in a very particular way. Jeff and I both get to have these conversations all the time where we sit there and say, hey, who makes money? And you have a lot of people that say they make money, but they don't make money. Well, doing returns, we do over 5,000 a year. We can see who actually makes money. And guess what? It's not the people that say they're making money. It's the people that won't tell you what they're doing. And they're all doing kind of the same stuff, which cash flow is king. So please come on in and join us for that. It's kind of fun. Other than that, play with us on social media. And if you have questions, I understand we are getting inundated with questions. We are getting hundreds of questions a week. Our guys are doing their best to get through them. I know not every question we're able to get on live, but we're doing our best that we can for you guys. But you can always ask questions Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors. And that's where I draw the questions that we answer. I literally go in there last night. I just went and I grabbed a bunch. There's so many that I just try to grab the ones that seem interesting. If I don't know the answer right off the top of my head, I usually grab it. And then I say, Jeff, I hope you know.
He does.
Yeah, I said, did you read them? Usually about an hour before we go on, I said, did you read them? And then we make sure that we have a pretty good idea of, like, of what would help the group. I tend to not get into the very individually focused stuff just because I really care about stuff that everybody can learn from. So anyway, that's it for this version of Tax Tuesday. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. Hey, and thanks to all those that helped answer the questions. It is a great help. It allows people to ask even more questions.
Elliot and Pio and Tavia and Susan and Patty, you guys rock. Thank you. And everybody seems to really appreciate you guys. So thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.